spring-like temperatures are in the forecast, and tiny green sprouts are popping up under grow lights all over the place. This hour, we're going to talk about starting seeds. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Richard Giron is here to give us some advice about starting seeds. And entomologist Donald Lewis is here. We'll talk about the first insects to emerge each spring. And our spring membership drive is underway. It's time to help Iowa Public Radio grow. Please make your investment today at iowapublicradio.org. And every member who contributes this hour will receive a horticulture calendar. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and spring is on the way. Many people have already started some of the seeds for their gardens, but there is still time if you're planning to do that, although not a lot of time left. Richard Giron is here with me today from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Donald Lewis is also here, Iowa State University Extension entomologist. Good morning, Donald.
Hello, Charity.
And Richard, is it fun to hear your calendar talked about?
Yes.
Because you're the guy responsible for all of those pictures and a lot of that information, too, right?
Yes.
All
Some
right.
of it, yes.
And it's been going on for a long, long time, about 30 years.
About 30 years, yeah.
We've been doing the garden calendar, so it's a great project.
Many people have been dependent on that information for many, many springs and summers and falls, I'm sure. And I'm going to have to go buy my new gloves tomorrow now that I know that's what I need to do tomorrow.
Okay. Good.
All right. Let's talk about starting seeds. And we'll get to questions in a little while as well. So you can call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So we are really in the thick of the time when people should be starting seeds. Are we late for some things?
We are. A few things. It all depends upon how long it takes for them to grow. For example, I sowed some wax begonia seed on February 3rd. They are still so small I can barely see them. They just have a very long crop time. So things like geraniums, wax begonias, New Guinea impatiens, a little bit late for those just because they have a long crop time.
All right. What are some things that we can get started right now?
Well, for example, this weekend I'd probably do things like maybe petunias. Possibly impatiens, regular impatiens, cabbage, broccoli, and cauliflower. It's a little bit early for things like peppers, maybe next weekend, tomatoes, maybe late March sometimes, because they grow so quickly. And basically what you want is a nice, short, stocky plant. And if you start them too soon, they get real tall and leggy, and they're not very suitable.
Right. Once you put them outside, They just get crushed.
Yes.
So tell me about a good setup. If you're just getting started, what do you need?
Basically, a good germination medium like Jiffy Mix, which is a commercial product. You can find that at most garden centers. You'll need some flats or trays, good quality seeds. And I use some plastic food wrap, and that's to hold the moisture in so they have uniform moisture conditions. And I also actually use some flat-sided toothpicks.
All right. And what do you need as far as grow lights and the right environment?
Basically, you really want to use lights if you can, because if you put them in a sunny window, they just don't get enough sunlight and they get very tall and lanky. And so you can just use a fluorescent shop fixture. And the key there is to put 240-watt tubes in the fixture, and ideally a cool white and a warm white tube, and then position those just a few inches above the seedlings, like 4, 5, 6 inches.
It's really close.
Very, very close. So they get plenty of light. And you can use a very cheap timer to make sure they get plenty of light from like maybe 12, 14 hours per day.
All right. And what do you have to do as they grow to make sure that those stalks are strong?
Well, basically, make sure they get plenty of light. That's really important. Also, don't overwater. Once they come up, allow that germination mix to dry out somewhat before you water again. And make sure they have plenty of space. If they're crowded, if they're watered constantly, if they don't get enough light, they get very, very tall, very lanky, and just not a very good quality seedling. So make sure they have the right conditions.
All right. And do you have any tips for transplanting?
Basically do that before they get too big. Typically, you want to do that when they develop their first true leaves. When you're using something like Jiffy Mix, one good tip is oftentimes that Jiffy Mix is dry. And if you fill your tray or flat with that and then water it, it tends to repel the water. It just sits there on top. It doesn't really absorb. So what you want to do is moisten it. And so what I typically do is just cut off the top of the bag, add some water, and then put my hand in there and just kind of mix it around so it is moist. Otherwise, like I said, you can fill your container, you can water it, and it simply will not absorb that moisture. So that can lead to very poor results.
I've seen some interesting pictures of alternative tray ideas. One of the things that I've been seeing quite a bit lately are eggshells. So you have the eggshell and you put them in a normal egg carton and use that. What do you think about that?
You can do that. You can use paper cups. You can use egg cartons. So you can use a number of different things. But usually I prefer something like a plastic flat, and you can reuse them. All you have to do is wash them and then basically disinfect them in a Clorox bleach solution, one part bleach, nine parts water, and that will disinfect them so you can use them again safely.
All right. Well, if you have any questions about starting seeds or any of the other plants in your life or that you hope to have in your life once it gets warm, you can give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Donald, yesterday when I looked at the forecast, I could see 50 degree temperatures in our future. Today when I look at the forecast, I can't. But, uh-huh. but we're getting closer. We're getting closer. And one of the things that I notice every spring is that it seems like suddenly there are insects. What are some of the earliest insects that show up when it gets warm?
A lot of the little things that we don't notice or the little things that we take for granted are out there pretty close to the soil surface. And in those areas where the soil is bare, you'll see some activity by these little tiny interesting critters called springtails. And in fact, springtails will show up on snowdrifts. And because they're these little black insects about a 16th of an inch long, and they're on the white snowdrift, they do contrast quite well, and we see those. But those small insects that don't have a lot of body to heat up, they can catch solar radiation, and in a short period of time, they will be active, but then the sun goes down, their body cools off, and they go back into sort of a state of dormancy. Otherwise, it will be a while before we see some of the big pretty things. Things like the morning cloak butterfly have spent the winter in the butterfly stage, and that's peculiar. That is unusual for a butterfly to try to make it and hibernate through the winter in the adult stage. More often, they either wait as caterpillars or they wait as pupae through the winter, and they have to then transform from the pupal stage, or from the cocoon in the case of a moth. They have to make that transformation to the adult stage before we will actually see them. Some of the other little things, the beetles that are on the ground, ladybugs have been active all winter in your house, and those that are sitting close to the surface, as soon as enough sunshine warms their body temperature, they will resume activity and they'll be out and about.
And what happens to them when the temperature drops? Do they just go dormant again?
They just go back into dormancy. Cutoff temperature is between 50 and 60 degrees, depending on species and a few other things. And that's body temperature, not air temperature. So even though it's not 50 degrees, there will be insects that are active because they have been in a place where they can absorb heat. Either they're absorbing heat from the furnace, in the case of attic flies, box elder bugs, multicolored Asian lady beetles that are in the wall of your house, or they are outside in an area of either bare soil or enough sunshine reaching them to warm them up so they can be active.
When we talk about mammals and the number of times that they wake or sleep in the winter, for example, with bats, it can be a bad thing if they wake up too often during the winter because they'll use up too much energy. Is that a problem for some kinds of insects if the temperature goes up and down too much?
It can be, and that's one of the major mortality factors through the winter, more so than just it got too cold. There are some southern insects that don't make it through Iowa winters because it just plain gets too cold for them to survive.
For which a lot of us are very grateful.
That's right. Hibernation of mammals is a different process mm-hmm. than the dormancy of insects. There are some similarities in that, yes, they can go in and out of dormancy. And when they are out of dormancy, they are using up energy. Those ladybugs that are walking around on your windowsill today are wasting energy that they're going to need to reproduce next spring. And that's why most of the insects that hide indoors where it stays warm are at a disadvantage. They do not get to reproduce because they die prematurely for wasting that energy. Going in and out of freezing cold is also very hard on insects. That if it were 20 below and then suddenly it warms up to 50 and they are out and about, but then it goes back to 20 below, those periods are also very hard on insect survival.
All right. Well, let's get to the phones. You can join us at 866-780-9100 with your questions about plants, with your questions about insects. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tricia is on the line in Coon Rapids. Hi, Tricia.
Hi. I have been trying to grow oriental poppies. I've tried throwing them on the ground, and mm-hmm. I've tried starting them in Jiffy 7. I have had zero success growing poppies.
They can be hard to establish. Once you get them established, they're fine. They're long-lived. They're very durable, but they can be hard to establish. I would try to establish them by planting small plants, a potted plant, and you could do that in the spring. Or if you know somebody that has them, going out there in late July or August, once they die back, when they're dormant, digging them up and then taking some of those roots and replanting the roots.
I see. So you say try starting them in a pot indoors?
Well, I would try to actually buy plants, container-grown plants at a nursery or a garden center. It can be hard to grow them from seed.
Oh, I see.
So I would try to buy either container-grown plants, or if you know of a site where they have them, digging and dividing some of those roots in late July or August.
Yeah, I want the Himalayan blue poppy, and I've never seen a place where it's sold as a plant.
Yeah, those are a challenge. What I'm thinking of as far as a poppy is the oriental poppy, which is very common in Iowa, typically bright oranges, bright reds, pretty easy to grow. But the Himalayan blue poppy is rather challenging, kind of finicky. It likes a cool environment, a moist environment. Last year would have been horrible for it. So it can be quite challenging, quite finicky. I would try the ones that are more easy to grow initially.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck to you. Thanks a lot for your call. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And, poppies are one of those things, Richard, that especially on farmsteads, you see forever.
Absolutely.
So once you get them going, they go.
Yes, and low maintenance. They're one of those 55-mile-an-hour plants because when you're driving down the road, you can see them in a distance. You know exactly what they are by the color of that flower.
You guys are making me feel like a failure because I think I've killed every one I ever tried.
They can be hard to establish. They can be.
Well, and they often, they're another one of those like peonies that is beautiful so briefly.
Yes.
Because they bloom and they're gorgeous and then it rains.
They're about there for about a week, maybe 10 days, and they're gone. So.
All right. Marianne is on the line now from Ames. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. Something that will really kill your poppies is putting tiger lilies next to them.
Uh-huh.
Because those lilies are quite the choker off of other vegetation. This is the first year I've ever had box elder bugs in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like there was a hatch, and suddenly I had all kinds of box elder bugs in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything I can do to find out where they laid their eggs or to eliminate that?
Oh, what a great question, because you've hit upon one of the great mythologies, and that is that somehow these insects that feed on sap from trees were able to reproduce inside the house. Every box elder bug you find in your house crawled inside through a crack or a gap back in October, that they cannot reproduce inside. They don't grow inside. They have sucking mouth parts. They have like aphid beaks, sort of like a mosquito. And all they can feed on is sap from trees, primarily maple trees, and they feed on the twigs and the stems and the seeds. And you don't have any of that in the wall of your house, so they can't reproduce. They don't lay their eggs in the house, in the wall voids. And everyone you see crawled indoors, fully grown, as an adult, last October. Now, where were they until now? They were probably in a very cold section of the wall, that the heat from the furnace didn't reach them, the heat from the sun didn't reach them, and when they finally got warm enough, they came out to surprise you, but they had been there all along.
All right, we need to take a short break. Marianne, thanks for your call. I'm talking with Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis and horticulturist Richard Giron. We will take more of your calls, your questions, when we come back in just a couple of minutes. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa.
My name is Pat Blank, and I've been hosting and reporting on public radio for more.
It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me today, Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist, and horticulturist Richard Giron. They are here to answer your questions. And here's another phone number that you can call to be a part of the conversation. That's 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, let's go to Dave on the line in Boone. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hi.
I used to be a rural mail carrier outside of Ogden, and I did know Carl. Never.
Oh, wow. That's my grandfather.
I know. Big band guy.
Yep.
He used to put together cassettes for us, Christmas music at the post office. We all miss him. Say, I read an article on the Internet this week about a new antioxidant super fruit that they say grows in the Midwest, and it's called aronia berries. They call it a choke cherry, but
no.
I've always called choke cherries a wild cherry tree, and they say it grows in bushes.
Right. This aronia is a shrub or a bush. You could call it choke berry, not choke cherry.
I see.
It is a shrub. We can grow it. It typically grows about 6, 7, 8 foot tall. And what we basically grow as far as edible fruit has a black fruit. There's also an ornamental choke cherry or berry that has bright red fruit. But we can grow them. Now, the actual fruit, yes, they are very high in antioxidants. They are. But you typically wouldn't probably eat them like you would a blueberry or a strawberry or a raspberry. Typically, they use them like in preserves or in juices where they add them to other fruits so they have much better flavor. And so they're basically processed. And so they are grown commercially in certain areas in the Midwest. There is a Midwest Aronia Association. And I think they're having meetings in Des Moines, I think the first weekend in April. And so they're going to discuss some of their practices, their culture, that type of thing. But no, you can definitely grow them in Iowa. They're easy to grow. They're very, very hardy. They're not terribly demanding. So we can definitely grow them, yes.
And I'm reading through the lines here, Richard, but I hear you saying they don't taste very good.
Well, You wouldn't typically just go out there and pick them in your mouth like a blueberry. They're kind of astringent a little bit, so most people would not find them very appetizing in that way. Right? They wouldn't.
Right. Dave, does that answer your question?
Well, they're described as super tart, so I guess that goes right along.
Yes, that's why they call it choke berry.
Yeah. Well, I was confusing it with choke cherry or mm-hmm. they were. I don't know
right.
which. Because they are also tart, I would say.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
But it's supposed to be have twice as much antioxidants as cranberries. So, and four times as much as strawberries or pomegranates or blueberries.
So right, right.
It sounds like a good thing if you can incorporate them into your diet somehow.
If you can choke them down.
Dave, thank you so much for your call, and we're going to move on next to John in Rockford. Hi, John.
Oh, hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a question about some large pine trees, red pine and white pine. And I think when you had a forester on, I asked about the red pines. There's a couple of them where the top third is all turning brown, and he suggested I look for sawdust at the base. I haven't found any of that. And, you know, I guess my question is, is it just due to drought, or are there other insects? Is there anything I can do to save the trees, or if I cut them down, do I need to burn them right away?
I would say there's a number of things going on. The weather the last 4 or 5 years has been very erratic.
Terrible.
We had very, very wet years in 2008, 2009, 2010. And I think because we did, the trees suffered because the ground was too wet. It was simply saturated. And then last year we had this very, very hot, very dry year. And so you have these extremes, and it's very difficult for the trees to deal with that, because most of these trees are not native to Iowa. And so our weather conditions the last 4 or 5 years have been very difficult for them. And I think that did cause quite a bit of stress and did cause some plants to actually basically perish just because of the very harsh conditions. But when you have plants under stress, then that makes them weaker and makes them more susceptible to insects and disease. And so in the case of pines, for example, we have things like pine wilt, we have Diplodia, we have Dothostroma. And so those things have been quite serious the last few years because of the weather conditions. And so it hasn't been a good year last year or two for the pine trees. They've been having some difficulties. As far as, let's say the tree died from disease, like pine wilt, and the pine wilt is destroying certain types of pines, like Scotch pines mainly. If a Scotch pine died and you cut it down, you wouldn't have to burn it. You could chop it up and use it as mulch, and that would be okay. And typically when you have a tree that dies from disease, if you chop it up like into a mulch, you can typically use it in most cases, that it's not going to harbor that insect or that disease.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, John. And on a similar topic, we got this email from Dale, and he says, I want to purchase an imperial tree peony and a saucer magnolia later this spring. What can I do to increase the likelihood that they will survive Iowa winters?
Okay. As far as the magnolia, there are some that are much hardier than others. The ones that we can grow best are things like the saucer magnolia and the star magnolia. The star especially is very, very hardy, and they have introduced quite a few newer varieties. Some of these are basically hybrids between various types of magnolias, and some of these will grow up into central Wisconsin and Minnesota. So there are some nice ones out there. Make sure you choose a hardy one, and try to choose a somewhat protected location. Don't put them out in the open where it's very, very sunny and windswept. Try to choose a protected location, and also maybe try to choose, in the case of some of those that bloom early, maybe an eastern exposure rather than a south or western, just to kind of discourage their blooming early in the spring, maybe a few days, because they tend to bloom early in the spring, and if we have a late frost or freeze, that can damage or destroy the flowers. So you really want to put them in a place that maybe would delay their blooming by a few days, if you could.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Bruce is on the line from Port Byron, Illinois. Hello, Bruce.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have a shag bark hickory, 40 years old at least.
Okay.
Very close to the Mississippi River, and yet just this last two seasons, most of the foliage, 80%, had dropped,
in August. And my concern is there anything that I'm not doing to protect this? I don't want to lose this tree. It's pretty valuable for mm-hmm. shade in the late afternoon. And I just didn't know if fertilization or watering, just I need some advice as to how do I protect and keep this a healthy shag bark hickory.
Right. I guess my first question would be, is this basically due to environmental stresses, or possibly is an insect or disease responsible for this?
If yeah, I don't see any. The leaves just dry up and fall just like they would in October.
Okay. So I would assume then it's maybe environmental stress. You probably can't do a whole lot at that point. I don't think fertilization would be of any benefit, but let's say we have another very hot, dry summer. Then if you could, I would water the tree just to make sure it has some moisture, because the last thing it needs is additional stress on the tree, because you could reach a breaking point at some time. So I would do that. I suppose you could kind of maybe mulch around the base if you have some wood chips or something of that nature. And okay. that way keep the ground cooler and more moist. You could do that.
Around the base, Richard, isn't just 18 inches either, is it?
No, it could be out to the drip line of the tree. So you can mulch the entire area beneath the tree, and that would provide a fairly favorable environment for the actual tree itself. So you could do that. And watering possibly might be beneficial.
All right, Bruce, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Gina on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Gina.
We live out in the country, and our lawn really took a beating with the heat, and we had very large sections that died. I don't know if it has to do with the gophers, the grubs, or the heat, or a combination, but we overseeded. We raked it, and we overseeded, and it did. Some of it did start to come back, but, I mean, we had probably 50 to 100-foot sections that were just completely dirt dead. And the moles were still running around in there, and I did do my best to try to kill the mole with trap. But I don't know. I'm wondering this spring, what's the best thing I can do to kind of get it off to a good start, and then how to keep it from dying if we do, you know, and if the seed that I put down last fall is going to, will that come up again, or is it going to have to be
reseeded? Well, if it came up last fall, that grass hopefully should survive. If it didn't come up last fall, most likely it won't come up from seed this spring. Basically, I think I'd go ahead and maybe fertilize around mid-April, put on a lawn-type fertilizer, and then basically keep it well mowed. By that I mean doing it frequently, fairly high, around 3 inches in height. And then hopefully that would encourage the grass to kind of fill in. And then if you're still kind of disappointed in the results, then I would try to overseed actually in late August, early September. That's the best time to do it, actually, is typically late summer. And one way of doing that would be to get a core aerator and pull out plugs of soil and typically run over the lawn two or three times in different directions. So you have many, many holes in the yard. And then sow your grass seed. And then drag the area with a drag mat or a piece of fencing, like chain link fencing. And that would break up the soil cores and also kind of work the seed into the soil. And then at that point, I would water the areas that I could if it doesn't rain. Otherwise, just cross your fingers and hope for the best, because you're going to need some moisture for the grass seed to come up. But everything else should be fine at that time of year.
All right, Gina, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, and Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension Entomologist. And let's go next to Dave on the line from Anamosa. Hi, Dave.
Howdy.
Hi, what's your question?
Last fall, I wanted to put some winter rye out as a cover crop for my garden. Well, I never got around to it. Can I still put that out this early spring?
You could, but what do you intend to plant in the garden?
Well, I'm just going to grow two pumpkin plants, and so I want to have a cover crop. So as the pumpkin gets larger, then I'll be able to clear back those sections where the pumpkin is, and then keep on bringing it back farther as the pumpkin gets bigger.
Okay. You could use something like oats, or if you prefer, something that germinates very, very quickly. And then you could just mow it off when you want to destroy it. You could do that, too.
Will his winter rye come up yet this if he plants it in the spring?
I think it should. I think it should.
Yeah, it may not mount to much.
But it might do what he wants it to do.
Right.
All right. Dave, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Paula on the line in Denison. Hi, Paula.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
My question is, I've been trying to find bitter melon, either seeds or plants, for about the last year, very unsuccessfully. And I just wondered if you had any suggestions on where I might find these.
Bitter melon.
I think it's an Asian melon.
Yeah. I would look at some of the companies that specialize in kind of heirloom seeds.
So
I would look at, for example, Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa.
Okay.
And they have a web page. And the other one that comes to mind is Baker Creek in Missouri. They have some very unusual, very odd things, basically heirloom type things. And so I would look at Seed Savers and Baker Creek and see if they might have those.
Okay, B-A-K-E-R?
Yeah, Baker Creek, yes.
Baker Creek. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, Paula, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get to an email question here. This is from David in Des Moines. He says, I'm going to grow serrano peppers from seed this year. In the past, I've ended up with tall, spindly-stemmed seedlings. Is there anything I can do to prevent that from happening this year? And so we talked about that earlier, but let's just do a quick review.
I probably sowed the seed indoors maybe next weekend. And as soon as they come up, put them underneath fluorescent lights. Move them outside in late April, harden them off, put them in the shade initially, and then gradually expose the plants to longer periods of sunlight. After about 4 or 5 days, go ahead and plant them outside. And choose a well-drained, fertile soil, plenty of sun. Keep them well-watered. Last year was a bad year for peppers in that many peppers simply didn't produce very many fruit in that extreme heat tends to reduce flower formation and pollination. So they weren't very fruitful last year, I think.
All right. But again, keep the light really close.
Right, as far
as
seedlings,
key.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And we have time for a couple more calls at 866-780-9100. Jim is on the line from Ames. Hi, Jim.
Yes.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a redbud tree that I've grown from seedling, and it's at about 5 feet. It got broken off, so I cleaned it up, and it grew a nice spike, about a 4-foot spike last year. But it never leafed out other than just leaves on the stem. It didn't branch, and I'm trying to keep it to a single branch, single trunk.
Right.
And I don't know how far back I should cut this whip that grew last year in order to encourage some growth. I've got a couple of few little side branches down below, but they're too low anyway. And it's about the point where I'd like to start it branching.
Right. And, I wouldn't prune it back at all at this point.
You wouldn't?
I think this year you should start to see some branches coming out of that whip.
Okay. Well,
and so
it was really a whip. I mean,
right.
That's all it was last year. And
so you may have to maybe support it this year.
Well, I have
stake.
Supported it.
Okay. But definitely leave those bottom limbs on the plant.
For extra rows right now, yeah.
Right. So it doesn't become too top heavy. They'll come off eventually, but leave them on right now.
Sure.
And hopefully they'll develop some nice side branches this year. I'm thinking they will.
Okay.
And so
Well, I didn't know if I should try to encourage it by pruning it back a foot or so. And
yeah, I don't think I would. I would just leave it as it is and just make sure it's supported. And I think you'll see several branches form on it this year, I think.
Very good.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we'll go to Matt in Adair. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Hey, I was calling about hopefully getting some advice about what type of blueberry plants to plant this spring.
Okay, blueberries and raspberries?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Okay. On blueberries, there are a number of varieties that we can grow. No problem there. You want to plant two or three different varieties so you get cross-pollination, better fruiting. Things like Patriot, Elliot, Blue Crop, Blue Jay. So a number of good varieties there. They do need an acid soil. So when you plant those, dig a wide hole, shallow hole, mix half the soil with sphagnum peat moss, which is very, very acidic, and then backfill with that 50-50 mix. As far as raspberries, we have red raspberries, purple raspberries, black raspberries. We can grow all of those basically here in Iowa. As far as red raspberries, you have things like Latham, Heritage, Boyne, Autumn Bliss. Black raspberries, you have Blackhawk. Purple, you have things like Royalty. So we can grow those fairly easily here in Iowa.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for your call. And on the subject of fruit, this is from Matt in Mitchellville. He says, I've got a small orchard and was thinking of planting a few pawpaw trees. Can you give me any thoughts or comments about growing pawpaws in Iowa?
Pawpaws. In central Iowa.
Well, you know, we talked about that with Patrick O'Malley last spring, and he said that they were doing great. And I think we even heard from somebody in Woodward who had had a pawpaw orchard.
Okay.
So I guess I would suggest, Matt, going to the Iowa Public Radio website and go back, search for pawpaw, and then you can listen to that show. But yeah, he said they're easy to grow.
Well, my only concern was hardiness. And if they're growing well, like you mentioned in Iowa City, they probably should be okay in the Des Moines area, too. They may have difficulty maybe in Sioux City or Mason City.
All right. And we were talking about aronia berries earlier. John called in. He says, what is the best time to take a cutting for propagation of established aronia bushes?
I'm not positive on that. I would tend to think maybe late June or July, where you take a softwood cutting, I would guess. I'm not sure if you can propagate those from hardwood cuttings, but I would guess you could a softwood cutting, basically of the new growth in late June or July, where that new growth has partially hardened, but it's not woody yet. And then you have to root that in either coarse sand or perlite. You have to keep the moisture in so they don't wither and die. But if they have the right environment, my guess is they would root.
All right. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron. He will, of course, be back next Friday for Horticulture Day. Donald Lewis, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charity. Always a pleasure.
And next time you're on, there'll probably be insects buzzing about.
Well, we hope so.
All right. Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist, will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Jason Burns, Alyssa Weiss, Julie Englander, and Eric Jordan. I think everybody's working for the fun drive. And you can send us email anytime, of course, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.